May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Donna Coltharp. I represent Sammy Salazar in the appeal before you this morning. Mr. Salazar was convicted of a failure to register as a sex offender offense, and his supervised release was revoked when he committed several violations. When the district court revoked his supervised release, it imposed a condition that stated that he must refrain from purchasing, possessing, or using sexually stimulating and sexually oriented materials. The condition clearly specifies pornography, but it just as clearly goes beyond pornography. To be plain, Mr. Salazar, under this condition, may not possess, purchase, or use any material that might be sexually stimulating, or any material that might be sexually oriented, in addition to any material that might be pornographic. The condition goes beyond mere media, because it says it includes, but is not limited to, any variety of media. It might include, for example, a video game. It might include a prophylactic purchased at a gas station. It might include anything that Mr. Salazar and his partner might want to purchase to enhance their personal relationship.
I think we know exactly what the district judge is trying to do here. I mean, it's kind of a common sense thing. They're a sex offender, and they're trying to keep him out of trouble. How would you, given that objective, how would you phrase this?
Mr. Salazar was convicted in Iowa of third-degree sexual assault, and although it's not clear in this record, it is clear in the earlier appeal that the conduct that he engaged in was basically Iowa statutory rape with either a 13 or a 14-year-old girl. If I were crafting a condition in this...
I appreciate that response, but it's really not... you're really suggesting that this is not, that the entire prohibition is not responsive to his underlying crime. He's a sex offender, and my question to you is that if you're trying to treat it, whether that's proper or not, it's a different question. But if you're addressing a sex offender, then how would you phrase this?
For Mr. Salazar, I think a condition that prohibited him from looking at images of children would have been sufficient. I'd also add that the second special condition in this case enables a therapist in this case to craft a condition that is particularly responsive to any risk that Mr. Salazar poses. We didn't object to that condition. So in consulting with his therapist, if the therapist says, which there is no record evidence to support, Mr. Salazar, you have a pornography problem, then under the conditions in this case, the therapist can say, Mr. Salazar, no pornography for you. Mr. Salazar, you can't visit that adult video shop. Mr. Salazar, movies that haven't been rated yet are not for you. You've got a pornography problem. We didn't object to that condition. What we're objecting to is a condition that stops Mr. Salazar in his tracks before he tries to use, purchase, or possess material that he has a constitutional right to possess.
Well, and if he's a sex offender and he doesn't register, we have to protect the public. This is to defer future bad acts, hopefully.
It is blatantly clear from this record that Mr. Salazar does not want to register as a sex offender. It is not clear from this record, there is no evidence in this record, that his desire not to register has anything to do with sexually oriented materials or sexually explicit materials or pornography.
But is he a sex offender or not?
He's a sex offender. He has to register. He has not registered.
Now, whether that category sweeps too broadly is perhaps a matter to address to the Congress in the first instance. I mean, one can say that this lifetime stigma, you can argue that this puts a badge on the cross and so forth forever, and it does. I mean, it's very limiting. It's very severe. But that's the law, isn't it?
As a legal matter, Your Honor, As a legal matter, I have no argument with the requirement to register and no argument that the claim that Mr. Salazar has failed to do so. My contention, and I think Congress has spoken to my contention is that a special supervised release condition, a condition that's fashioned for a particular defendant, that's what a special condition is.
Ms. Coulter, before we get to that point, there's the issue of whether there was a specific enough objection and whether the judge allowed there to be an objection and was there an opportunity to object, and that would affect the standard that we look at this, either abuse of discretion or not. What do you say as to that? What is the standard? And if our standards are different, if it's clear error versus abuse of discretion, does that make a difference?
It's abuse of discretion. Ms. Saad did everything she could do to make an objection timely, and she was cut off three times. If it's not abuse of discretion, although the law in this circuit is not good for me on plain error, I would argue that Mr. Salazar is the paradigmatic case for reversing this condition. He did not look at child pornography as his underlying offense. At least that would be some nexus. He has not offended in 10 years, other than to not report, which is a serious offense. But he's not committed a sexual offense against anybody in 10 years. There's no evidence that he's been any kind of problem like that. He simply committed a statutory rape 10 years ago. The man does not want to register as a sex offender. There's no evidence that the use or the viewing of sexually stimulating or oriented materials
How old was he when that offense was committed?
Excuse me? He was 24.
He was 24?
He was 24.
And a woman, a young girl, I guess. How old was she?
She was either 13 or 14. I am not trying to minimize the seriousness of Mr. Salazar's offense, merely to suggest that the 10 years since he's committed
it. Ranges of statutory rape. Sometimes we have a 17-year-old boy and a 15-year-old girl.
Those are much harder.
And we can look, common sense, you know, look at those a bit differently than a 24-year-old and a 13-year-old girl.
I think your point has broader application, and it's an application that in these political times we sometimes forget. Every sexual offender is different. That's why we have special conditions. Every sexual offender is different. Many sexual offenders come to you having looked at child pornography, having confessed that pornography is contributing to their misbehavior, having pictures of actual children, like in this court's case in Paul, in
like
their possession.
A 13-year-old?
Excuse me?
He had a real 13-year-old. He didn't need the child pornography, but it's still against the law, so there's no reason why it shouldn't be prohibited here.
I think we're confusing whether his conduct when he was 24 was illegal, which it was, with whether it was related to pornography, which on this record, it was not. This court looked at a similar issue in a case called Woods. And the issue in that case was, could the district court limit a person's associational freedom, another freedom protected by the First Amendment? Could it do so? And if it could, what was the standard that the court should apply in affirming or reversing that decision? And what the court said was very consistent with what the Third, the First, and the Seventh Circuits have held, which is that the condition has to be directly related to the underlying offense, directly related. Now, if we say that everything having to do with sex is barred from a probationer because he committed a sex offense 10 years ago, then we've made a mockery out of special conditions. I mean, we might as well say Mr. Salazar.
To deter future acts. That's the whole point of condition six.
And if there was evidence that a pornography or a sexually oriented condition could do so, then it would be directly related. There's simply no evidence. This is not like Miller, where the defendant had images that included both children and women and adult women in his possession. This is not like Paul, where the defendant had actual pictures of children. This is not like Brigham, which the court redressed under plain error. This is not like Weatherton, where the court merely required a condition on sexually explicit material. This is not like any child pornography case that this court has considered, where it's clear that the defendant has a pornography problem. This is a 10-year-old offense. There is a condition that requires Mr. Salazar to seek treatment and to permit his therapist to put limitations where there are specific risks. And
what were the new offenses, Ms. Coldthorpe? I think there was failure to register, but there was also some...
There was a domestic assault. He struck a woman in the chest.
I'm sorry.
That's exactly right.
I didn't hear you respond.
He struck a woman in the chest. So, for example, in that case, a condition that prohibited him from being around that woman or required him to have domestic abuse treatment would be related to his offense. That striking a woman in the chest isn't related to sexually oriented materials.
Now, these were conditions that I think the judge attempted to put on him before, but this court reversed it because they weren't part of the announcement of the sentence.
Before Judge Beery, they weren't announced as part of the sentence, nor was there any litigation about whether they were reasonably related, no opportunity to object. Because they've become somewhat standard in the Western District for sex offenders, right? They're treated more like standard conditions than special conditions in the Western District. When Judge Beery entered the written judgment, they were included as the special conditions. We objected that they didn't conform. This court reversed. And then when he went in for a revocation, Judge Moses, after being reminded by the probation officer, tacked them on again.
But there was no specific objection to this condition six.
We were asked to make a specific objection. In response to that request, we tried twice and again asked to go to the bench.
Nobody said condition six. I mean, that's pretty easy.
No, we said we would object to these conditions as overly burdensome. The court said overruled.
Oh, you didn't
we
say
said,
which ones.
And no,
can't
Your Honor,
you just
we asked
that?
To, we
I mean,
asked to go to the bench. I don't think it's a fencing match. We tried. We were asked to be specific. We began by saying, well, then, Your Honor, I would object that they're overly burdensome and dash in the record. The judge cut us off. We tried again. The judge said overruled again. The plain error rule merely requires us to apprise the judge that we have a problem with what she's doing. The judge didn't want to hear that.
Let me take you back. You said what was the circumstances of his hitting a woman in the chest? That must have resulted in some sort of assault charge.
Yes.
Family assault.
He was charged in state court with family assault.
With what?
With domestic assault.
And what was the outcome of that?
Your Honor, I don't know. The only thing I know for sure is that he has been released from this revocation sentence. I do not know the resolution of his state offense.
I guess my question is, did the PSR or any of the materials before the district judge inform the district judge of any of the details of that?
All I have in the PSR is that he was charged with a state offense for striking a woman in the chest. I'm happy to, I have that at my desk and I can pull that up. Yeah. It's in the worksheet.
That's fine, thank you.
But nothing other than that. Anything else from the court? Okay.
Yeah,
save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. In our brief, we cite an unpublished decision from this court, a case called Symington, in which it is virtually identical to the facts of this case. It's a case where an individual was convicted of sexual assault, not a child pornography offense, not an internet-related offense.
In that case, what was the standard used? Was it a plain error, or was it the abuse of discretion?
I'm glad you asked that, Judge Prado, because there's a dispute about whether it should be plain error or not. And what this court said specifically is that recently we have concluded that this common sense approach would, independent of the standard of review, apply to evaluating condition of supervision release identical to the one presently before us in this case. The condition in this case, in Symington, is identical to the one that we have today. And what this court said was, while a skilled legal imagination can certainly think of a variety of literary, biblical, or artistic materials that may be theoretically covered by this condition, we conclude that a common sense reading of the relevant terms gives him adequate notice of the materials that he is barred from accessing, and they're looking at it from basically a due process analysis. And what I'm suggesting to this court is that while he may have a therapist and he may have the ability to get treatment, he refuses to register repeatedly.
Where is he now?
I believe he is actually off of supervision, if I'm not mistaken.
He's on lengthy supervision.
Lengthy supervision, but not incarcerated. He served his term.
So where does he live? Did he register there?
I'm not sure whether he's currently registered or not, but I believe it's either in the Del Rio or San Antonio division of the Western District of Texas. That's, I believe. He had requested...
It's like a continuing offense, so maybe somebody ought to check on it.
Maybe so, Your Honor. The point being, however, is that given his history and characteristics, it makes sense that the district court would impose the restriction that it did, and that if he successfully registers, and that if he successfully complies and goes to treatment, he can go in and seek to have that condition amended. What they're arguing in this case is for the reverse, that we start with the most lenient reading and then hope that he doesn't commit another offense or in other ways. These conditions are designed to assist in his rehabilitation and to deter future criminal conduct. And when you look
at... this is restrictions on pornography, but he has no pornography conviction. It was a statutory rape 10 years earlier. How is that related to pornography or sexually stimulating devices? I mean, is there a connection? It's sex, yes, but is there really a connection between a statutory rape that's 10 years old and pornography or sexually stimulating devices?
As a sexual offender, I believe that this is part of the rubric of conditions that the district courts routinely apply to sex offenders to aid in their rehabilitation.
But I think that's the argument, that it shouldn't be routinely applied, the argument is for individualized sentencing, which we do like to have.
Especially in this case, given his propensity and brazen, he's three times he's been convicted of failure to register. Given his history, it makes sense that the conditions would be as broad as possible to eliminate the sort of conduct that basically could lead him back down the path of sexual misconduct. And so in this case, I believe that the district court's decision was clearly an attempt to apply the factors that it's charged with applying, and that is looking to deter and rehabilitate.
Are these standard conditions that are put on every sex offender in the Western District?
They are not standard conditions, technically. They are special conditions. However...
Are these special conditions put on every sex offender in the Western
District? In many cases, we have had, in this last year or so, several cases work their way through the court where we had a conflict between the oral pronouncement and the written judgment. And this was one of those cases. And so in those cases, as this court's precedent is well clear, if they're not part of the oral pronouncement, they must be removed. And in this case, Mr. Salazar, of course, that's what happened. But then, lo and behold, he commits another crime, a violent crime against... he's had some history of, although we're not supposed to look at his arrest record, but I think the district court is aware of it. And in this case, of course, this was one of the allegations that resulted in his revocation. He has a history of violent conduct towards women as well. And in this case, so
back to my question, are these special conditions geared to him, or are these conditions that the probation office suggests on every single sex offender in the Western District?
I believe that not every single one. I couldn't make a global statement that far. But I do believe that these are part of the general gist of conditions that we routinely see. But in this case, the district court was quite adamant that these were the conditions. Judge Moses, upon being alerted to the fact that she needed to specifically read these into the record at sentencing, did so and made sure, and she made it very clear, that she wanted these conditions to apply to this defendant. And that goes back, I think, to the objection. And, of course, the objection was, well, that's overbroad. Well, this court has consistently said that overbroad is not a specific enough objection to preserve a First Amendment challenge, a due process challenge. You need to basically identify what it is that you believe is an error. And in this case, the judge says, well, you better be specific. And admittedly, it was a tense conversation, and I'm not suggesting at the bench that it wasn't. But there was never an attempt to really say anything specific. You know, the objection wasn't, we believe that this pornography restriction is unrelated to his count of conviction, there was an objection like that. It was just overbroad, and I think the judge was expressing her dissatisfaction by saying, well, it's got to be more specific than that. And there was some back and forth. But I think regardless of the standard of review in this case, that this condition is warranted, was properly considered, given his history and characteristics, which is part of the standard under that the district court's charged with applying in this case, that the court...
The other bad acts, the other relevant conduct was in the pre-sentence report?
Beg your pardon, Your Honor?
Were the other bad acts that you referred to...
Yes, they were. Yes. And of course, the revocation in this case was a direct result of his domestic violence again. And so it just seems, on a fair reading of this record, and this court has talked about applying a common sense approach, that this sort of restriction is very much warranted given his history and the unique facts of this case. If there's nothing else.
Thank you.
Well, I deliberately did not mention Michelangelo's David so that Mr. Gay would not quote that language. Under a common sense approach of this condition, the materials that Mr. Salazar is prohibited from possessing are within his constitutional right to possess. I've limited my arguments to the materials that I think the probation officer and the judge likely has in mind when they continue to impose this condition. Those materials include pornography, both soft and hard, but more especially soft pornography, sexually oriented materials such as not rated videos, sexually materials that this court has held a defendant has a right to use consistent with the Constitution, prophylactics. I think those are the items that the probation officer and the court try to get at, and this condition is imposed more or less as a standard matter in every sex case. That condition didn't have anything, those materials don't have anything to do with Mr. Salazar's offense. What we want to say is that sex offenses are bad and scary, and they are. So are domestic assault convictions. What we want are conditions that assist the defendant and protect the public. Conditions, for example, that keep him away from certain women. Conditions that require him to report. Conditions that prohibit him from looking at material that's directly related to his offense. What we don't want are conditions that are so unrelated to what he did, that they're simply punitive, that they're simply attempts to express an outrage that his sentence and that more condign conditions express already. Mr. Gay mentioned Symington. The First Amendment portion of Symington was under plain error review. For reasons that are not clear to me, the Symington court did not address our statutory argument at all. So the statutory argument is before this court fresh, and I would argue not on plain error review. The court did address the due process error under abuse of discretion, but I have not raised a due process error. I do not believe that this condition is vague. I think it's enormously broad. It is not related to his prior offense, and that it's going to chill Mr. Salazar's ability to use and view materials that he otherwise has a constitutional right to use and view. Judge Higginbotham asked me about Congress. I would just point out that the standard conditions are listed in the statute in 3583. If Congress wanted to make sex materials a standard condition, it could do so. It could revisit 3583. It could list sex materials for all sex offenses across the board. It hasn't done so. It's a special condition.
I guess that would apply to Congress, too, huh?
I'm sorry?
I guess that would apply.
To some. Yes. different rules. And that's all I have, unless the court has questions. I'm happy, by the way, to read the portion of the record dealing with our objection, just in case there are any...